Then we were allowed entry in the great hall of King Hrothgar, which verily I say is to be counted one of the marvels of the world, and all the more for its presence in the crude north country. This hall is called among the Hrothgar peoples by the name of Hirot, for the Northmen give the names of people to the things of their life, to the buildings and boats, and especially to the weapons. Now I say this. This Hirot, the great hall, was as large as the Caliph's main palace, and richly inlaid with silver and even some gold, which is most rare in the north. On all sides were designs and ornaments of the greatest splendor and richness of artistry. It was truly a monument to the power and majesty of King Hrothgar. This King Hrothgar sat at the distant end of Hirot Hall, a space so vast that he was so far we could hardly discern him. Standing behind his right shoulder was a herald who bid us approach. King Hrothgar appeared a man near death. He was not young. His hair was white. His skin was very pale, and his face was grooved with sorrow and fear. Finally, he broke into speech, which Hergr says was thus, "I know of this man, for I have sent for him on a hero's mission. He is Bulawif." Hrothgar then called for the warriors to be summoned to the great hall, and gifts brought, and celebrations to be made. Bulawif then spoke a long speech that Hergr did not translate for me, since to speak when Bulawif spoke would be a disrespect. However, the meaning was this, that Bulawif had heard of the troubles of Hrothgar, that his own father's kingdom had been destroyed by these same troubles, and that he had come to save the kingdom of Hrothgar from the evils that had beset them. Still, I did not know what the Northmen called these evils, or how they thought of them, though I had viewed the handiwork of the beasts that tore men to pieces. That evening there was a great celebration, and King Hrothgar and his wife, Queen Wilyu, in a garment dripping gemstones and gold, presided over the nobles and warriors and earls of the kingdom. These nobles were a paltry lot. They were old men and drank overmuch. In the eyes of all of them was the hollow stare of fear. Also, there was the son named Wiglaf, of whom I have earlier spoken, the son of Hrothgar, who murdered three of his brothers. This man was young and slender, with a blond beard and eyes that moved about constantly. Also, he never met the gaze of another. Hergr saw him and said, "He is a fox." By this he meant that he was a slippery and changeable person of false demeanor, for the North people believe the fox is an animal that can assume any form it pleases. Now, in the middle of the festivities, Hrothgar sent his herald to the doors of Hirot Hall, and this herald reported that the mist would not descend that night. There was much happiness and celebration over this announcement, that the night was clear. All were pleased, save Wiglaf. At a particular time, the son Wiglaf rose to his feet and said, "I drink honor to our guests, and especially Bulawif, a brave and true warrior who has come to aid us in our plight, although it may prove too great an obstacle for him to overcome." Hergr whispered these words to me, and I caught that it was praise and insult in one breath. All eyes turned to Bulawif for his response. Bulawif stood and looked to Wiglaf and then said, "I have no fear of anything. Even the callow fiend that creeps at night to murder men in their sleep." This I took to refer to the Wendol, but Wiglaf turned pale and gripped the chair in which he sat. "Do you speak of me?" Bulawif made this response, "No, but I do not fear you any more than the monsters of the mist." The young man Wiglaf persisted, although Hrothgar the king called for him to be seated. This bullywhiff arrived from foreign shores, has by appearance great pride and great strength. Yet have I arranged to test his mettle, for pride may cover any man's eyes. Now I saw this thing happen. A strong warrior, seated at a table near the door, behind Bullywiff, rose with speed, plucked up a spear, and charged at the back of Bullywiff. All this happened in less time than it takes a man to suck in his breath. Yet also Bullywiff turned, plucked up a spear, and with this he caught the warrior full into the chest and lifted him by the shaft of the spear high over his head and flung him against a wall. Thus was this warrior skewered on the spear. Now there came much commotion, and Bullywiff turned to face Wiglaf and said, "So shall I dispatch any menace." Now the night passed with further celebrations, and all the warriors of Bullywiff sported in a carefree fashion. I saw the sun Wiglaf glaring at Bullywiff before leaving the hall, but Bullywiff paid no attention, preferring the ministrations of slave girls and freeborn women. After a time, I slept. In the morning, I awoke to the sounds of hammering, and venturing from the great hall of Heorot, I found all the peoples of the kingdom of Hrothgar at work on defenses. These were being laid out in preliminary fashion. Horses drew up quantities of fence posts, which warriors sharpened to points. Bullywiff himself directed the placement of defense works. Upon the middle portion of the day, the woman who was called the Angel of Death came and cast the bones, and announced that the mist would come that night.
This is not the same Angel of Death who was with the Northmen on the banks of the Volga. Apparently, each tribe had an old woman who performed shamanistic functions, and was referred to by that tribe as the Angel of Death.
Upon hearing this, Bullywiff called for all work to cease, and a great banquet to be prepared. I inquired of Hergar why there should be a banquet, but he replied to me that I had too many questions. It is also true that I had timed my inquiry badly, for he was posturing before a blonde slave girl who smiled warmly in his direction. Now, in the latter part of the day, Bullywiff called together all his warriors and said to them, "Prepare for battle." And they agreed, and wished luck to one another. The night banquet was much as the previous one, although there were fewer of Hrothgar's nobles and earls. Indeed, I learned that many would not attend at all, for fear of what would happen in the Heorot Hall that night, for it seemed that this place was the center of the fiend's interest in the area. The banquet was not enjoyable to me, for reason of my apprehension of coming events. However, this event occurred. One of the elderly nobles spoke some Latin, and I engaged him in conversation. In this circumstance, I feigned knowledge that I did not have, as you shall see. He spoke to me thus, "So, you are the foreigner who shall be the number 13? You must be exceedingly brave," the old man said, "and for your bravery, I salute you." To this I made some trifling polite response, of the sense that I was a coward compared to the others of Bullywiff's company, which indeed was more than true. "No matter," said the old man, who was deep in his cups, having drunk the liquor of the region, a vile substance they call mead. "You are still a brave man to face the Wendel." Now I sensed that I might finally learn some matters of substance. I repeated to this old man a saying of the Northmen, "Animals die, friends die, and I shall die. But one thing never dies, and that is the reputation we leave behind at our death." The old man cackled toothlessly at this. He was pleased I knew a Northman proverb.
"That is so. But the Wendel have a reputation too."
And I replied with the utmost indifference, "Truly? I am not aware of it." At this, the old man said that I was a foreigner, and he would consent to enlighten me. And he told me this. The name Wendel, or Windon, is a very ancient name, as old as any of the peoples of the North Country, and it means the black mist. To the Northmen, this means a mist that brings under cover of night black fiends who murder and kill and eat the flesh of human beings. The fiends are hairy and loathsome to the touch and smell. They are fierce and cunning. They speak no language of any man, and yet converse among themselves. They come with the night fog, and disappear by day, to where no man durst follow. I expressed over great wonderment at his tale, in order to draw further words from the old man. Hugr saw me then, gave me a menacing look, but I paid him no heed. The old man continued thus, "In olden days, the black mist was feared by all the Northmen. Since my father and his father before, no Northman has seen the black mist, and some of the young warriors counted us old fools to remember the ancient tales. Yet the chiefs of the Northmen in all the kingdoms, even in Norway, have always been prepared for the return of the black mist. All of our towns and our fortresses are protected and defended from the land, and never have we seen the black mist." I inquired why the black mist had returned, and he lowered his voice to speak this reply. "The black mist has come from the vanity and weakness of Hrothgar, who has offended the gods with his foolish splendor, and tempted the fiends with the sighting of this great hall, which has no protection from the land. The gods have sent the black mist to strike him down and show him humility." I said to this old man that perhaps Hrothgar was resented in the kingdom. He replied thus, "No man is so good as to be free from all evil, nor so bad as to be worth nothing. Hrothgar is a just king, and his people prospered all of his life." I desired to know more, but the old man was tired, and turned away from me, and soon was asleep.
For Ibn Fadlan, with his extensive erudition, the notion of cannibalism may have implied some difficulties in the afterlife. The Eater of the Dead is a well-known creature of Egyptian mythology, a fearsome beast with the head of a crocodile, the trunk of a lion, and the back of a hippopotamus. This Eater of the Dead devours the wicked after their judgment.
Of the Table of Hrothgar I shall say this, that every man had a tablecloth and plate, and spoon and knife, that the meal was boiled pork and goat and some fish. Then there were cabbages and onions in abundance, and apples and hazelnuts. A sweetish fleshy meat was given me that I had not tasted before. This, I was told, was elk or reindeer. The dreadful foul drink called mead is made from honey, then fermented. It is the sourest, blackest, vilest stuff ever invented by any man, and yet it is potent beyond all knowing. A few drinks and the world spins. But I did not drink, praise Allah. Now I noticed that Bullywiff and all his company did not drink that night, or only sparingly, and Hrothgar took this as no insult, but rather acknowledged it as the natural course of things. There was no wind that night, and yet it was damp and chill. I saw with my own eyes that the mist was rolling down from the hills, blocking the silvered light of the moon, cloaking all in blackness. As the night continued, King Hrothgar and his queen departed for sleep, and the massive doors of Heorot Hall were locked and barred, and the nobles and earls remaining there fell into a drunken stupor and snored loudly. Then Bullywiff and his men, still wearing their armor, went about the room, dousing the candles, and seeing to the fires that they should burn low and weak. I asked Hugr the meaning of this, and he told me to pray for my life and to feign sleep. I was given a weapon, a short sword, but it was little comfort to me. I was not a warrior, and knew it full well. Verily, all the men feigned sleep. How long we waited, I do not know, for I think I slept a while myself. Then all at once I was awake, in the manner of unnatural sharp alertness. It was dark night. The candles in the hall burned low, and a faint breeze whispered through the hall and fluttered the yellow flames. And then I heard a low, grunting sound, like the rooting of a pig, and I smelled a rank odor like the rot of a carcass after a month, and I feared greatly. This rooting sound, this grumbling, grunting, snorting sound, grew louder and more excited. It came from outdoors, at one side of the hall. Then I heard it from another side, and then another, and another. Verily, the hall was surrounded. I sat up on one elbow, my heart pounding. No man among the sleeping warriors moved, and yet there was Hergr, lying with his eyes wide open. And there, too, Bulliwith, breathing in a snore, with his eyes also wide open, waiting to do battle with the Wendel, whose sounds now filled the air. By Allah, there is no fear greater than that of a man when he does not know the cause. I remembered this, that the Northmen have a saying of praise that they carve upon the tombstones of noble warriors, which is this: he did not flee battle. None of the company of Bulliwith fled that night, though the sounds and the stink were all around them. Then there came the most fearsome moment. All sounds ceased. Still, none of the warriors of Bulliwith stirred. And then there was a mighty crash upon the solid doors of the Hall of Heorot, and these doors burst open, and a rush of reeking air gutted all the lights, and the black mist entered the room. I did not count their number. Verily, it seemed thousands of black, grunting shapes, and yet it might have been no more than 5 or 6 huge black shapes, hardly in the manner of men, and yet also manlike. The air stank of blood and death. I was cold beyond reason and shivered, yet still no warrior moved. Then, with a curdling scream to wake the dead, Bulliwith leapt up, and in his arms he swung the giant sword Runding, which sang like a sizzling flame as it cut the air. And his warriors leapt up with him, and all joined the battle. I myself had no stomach for battle, and yet I was set upon by one of these mist monsters, who came close to me, and I saw gleaming red eyes. Verily, I saw eyes that shone like fire, and I smelled the reek, and I was lifted bodily and flung across the room as a child flings a pebble. I struck the wall and fell to the ground, and was greatly dazed for the next period, so all around me was more confused than true. I remember most distinctly the touch of these monsters upon me, especially the furry aspect of the bodies, for these mist monsters have hair as long as a hairy dog, and as thick on all parts of their bodies, and I remember the fetid smell of the breath of the monster who flung me. The battle raged for how long I cannot know, but it concluded most suddenly of a moment, and then the black mist was gone, slunk away, grunting and panting and stinking, leaving behind destruction and death that we could not know until we had lighted fresh tapers. Here is how the battle waged. Of the company of Bulliwith, 3 were dead: Ronath and Halga, both earls, and Edgtho, a warrior. The first had his chest torn open, the second had his spine broken, the third had his head torn off in the manner I had already witnessed. All these warriors were dead. Wounded were 2 others, Haltoth and Rethel. Haltoth had lost an ear, and Rethel 2 fingers of his right hand. Both men were not mortally injured, and made no complaining, for it is the Northman way to bear the wounds of battle cheerfully, and to praise above all the retaining of life. As for Bulliwith and Hergr, and all the others, they were soaked in blood as if they had bathed in it. Now I shall say what many will not believe, and yet it was so. Our company had killed not one of the mist monsters. Each had slunk away, some, perhaps, mortally wounded. and yet they had escaped. Hörger said thus,
I saw two of their number carrying a third who was dead.
Perhaps this was so, for all generally agreed upon it. I learned that the mist monsters never leave one of their kind to the society of men, but rather will risk great dangers to retrieve him from human purview. So also will they go to extreme lengths to keep a victim's head, and we could not find the head of Egtho in any place. Then Bullywiff spoke, and Hörger told me his words thus.
Look, I have retained a trophy of the knight's bloody deeds. See, here is an arm of one of the fiends.
And true to his word, Bullywiff held the arm of one of the mist monsters, cut off at the shoulder by the great sword Runding. I perceived it thusly. It appeared to be small, with a hand of abnormally large size. But the forearm and upper arm were not large to match it, although the muscles were powerful. There was long black matted hair on all parts of the arm, except the palm of the hand. Finally, it is to say that the arm stank as the whole beast stank, with the fetid smell of the black mist. Now all the warriors cheered Bullywiff and his sword Runding. The fiend's arm was hung from the rafter of the great hall of Heorot, and marveled at by all the people of the kingdom of Hrothgar. Thus ended the first battle with the Wendol. Verily, the people of the North Country never act as human beings of reason and sense. After the attack of the mist monsters, and their beating back by Bullywiff and his company, with me amongst them, there was no celebration, no feasting, no jubilation, or display of happiness. Contrary to any expression of pleasure, King Hrothgar made a long face, and seemed more fearful than he had been before. Nor was Bullywiff different in manner. Yet it was only in laying out the dead warriors that Bullywiff and his comrades showed happiness, or allowed themselves any smiles. I learned that they smile upon any death in battle, for this is pleasure taken on behalf of the dead person. The Northmen believe how a man dies determines his condition in the afterlife, and they value the death of a warrior in battle above all. They show distress when a man dies in his sleep or in a bed. They say of such a man, he died as a cow in the straw. Now the Northmen, who drink much liquor, and at all hours of the day and night, drink nothing on the day after the battle. This I found most puzzling, and spoke of it finally to Hörger. Hörger shook his shoulders in the Northmen's gesture of unconcern or indifference.
Everyone is afraid, because they know that the black mist will return.
Now I admit that I was puffed with the arrogance of a fighting man, though in truth I knew I did not deserve such a posture. Even so, I felt exhilaration at my survival, and the people of Hrothgar treated me as one of the company of mighty warriors. I said boldly, "Who cares for that? If they come again, we shall beat them a second time." Indeed, I was vain as a young cock, and I am abashed now to think upon my strutting. Hörger responded,
"The kingdom of Hrothgar has no fighting warriors or earls. They are all long since dead, and we alone must defend the kingdom. Yesterday we were 13, today we are 10, and of that 10, 2 are wounded and cannot fight as full men. The black mist is angered, and it will take a terrible vengeance. They will return as Qorgon."
"What is Qorgon?"
"The glowworm dragon which swoops down through the air."
Now this seemed fanciful, but I had already seen the sea monsters just as they said that such beasts truly lived, and I saw Hörger's strained and tired countenance, and I perceived that he believed in the glowworm dragon. Verily, even as he spoke, I saw that Bullywiff, though he had slept not at all during the night, was directing anew the building of defenses around the Hall of Heorot. All the people of the kingdom worked. This is what they did. About the perimeter of Heorot and the adjacent buildings, Bullywiff erected a kind of fence of crossed lances and poles with sharpened points. I could not see the value of this defense, for men could scale it easily. I spoke of this to Hergr, who called me a stupid Arab. Hergr was in an ill temper. Now a further defense was constructed, a ditch outside the pole fence, 1.5 paces beyond. This ditch was not deep, never more than a man's knees, and unevenly dug. And in places, short lances were sunk in the earth, points upward. I understood the value of this paltry ditch no better than the fence, but I did not inquire of Hergr, already knowing his mood. Instead, I aided the work as best I could, pausing only once to have my way with a slave woman in the Northman's fashion, for in the excitement of the night's battle and the day's preparations, I was most energetic. With the progression of the day, I saw clearly that the defenses of Bullywiff would not be completed by nightfall. Upon nightfall, work was halted, and to my perplexity, Hrothgar held another banquet of splendid proportions. This evening, while I watched, Bullywiff and Hergr and all the other warriors drank much mead and reveled as if they lacked any worldly cares, and had their way with the slave women, and then all sank into a stuporous, droning sleep. Now this night, while all the warriors of Bullywiff slept, I was too afraid to drink or laugh. I feared the return of the Wendal. But they did not return, and I also eventually slept, but fitfully. Now, with the fall of darkness, the mist crept down from the hills, slinking as fingers around the trees, seeping over the green fields towards the Hall of Hurot and the waiting warriors of Bullywiff. Here there was a respite in work. From a fresh spring, water was diverted to fill the shallow ditch, and then I understood the sense of the plan, for the water concealed the stakes and deeper holes, and thus the moat was treacherous to any invader. Further still, the women of Hrothgar carried goatskin sacks of water from the well, and doused the fence and the dwelling and all the surface of the Hall of Hurot with water. So also the warriors of Bullywiff drenched themselves in their armor with water from the spring. The night was damp cold, and thinking this is some heathen ritual, I begged excuses, but to no end. Hergr doused me head to foot like the rest. I stood dripping and shivering. In truth, I cried aloud at the shock of the cold water and demanded to know the reason. "The glowworm dragon breathes fire," Hergr said to me. Then he offered me a cup of mead to ease the chill, and I drank this cup of mead without a pause and was glad for it. Now the night was fully black, and the warriors of Bullywiff awaited the coming of the dragon Khorgan. All eyes were turned toward the hills, now lost in the mist of night. Verily, Bullywiff and all his company kept watchful vigil that night, and I among them. After a time I slept, and Hergr woke me thus, and brusquely, "If you sleep, you will miss the battle." I said in response that that would be no hardship according to my own way of thinking. Now Skeld gave a shout, and all the warriors of Bullywiff, myself among them, turned to look at the hills behind the blanket of mist. Here is what I saw. High in the air, a flowing fiery point of light, like a blazing star and a distance off. All the warriors saw it, and there was murmuring and exclamation among them. Soon appeared a second point of light, and yet another, and then another. I counted past a dozen, and then ceased to count further. These glowing fire points appeared in a line, which undulated like a snake, or verily, like the undulating body of a dragon. "Be ready now," Hergr said to me, and also the Northmen saying, "Luck in battle." This wish I repeated back to him in the same words, and he moved away. The glowing fire points were still distant, yet they came closer. Now I heard a sound which I took as thunder. Now I watched and listened, and the glowworm dragon of Khorgan bore down upon us in thunder and flame. Each blazing point of light grew larger, and baleful red, flickering and licking. The body of the dragon was long and shimmering, a vision most fierce of aspect, and yet I was not afraid, for I determined now that these were horsemen with torches, and this proved true. Soon then, from out of the mist, the horsemen emerged, black shapes with raised torches, black steeds hissing and charging, and the battle was joined. Immediately the night air filled with dreadful screams and cries of agony, for the first charge of the horsemen had struck the trench, and many mounts tumbled and fell, spilling their riders, and the torches sputtered in the water. Other horses tried to leap the fence, to be impaled on the sharp stakes. A section of the fence caught fire. Warriors ran in all directions. Now I saw one of the horsemen ride through the burning section of the fence, and I could see this Wendell clearly for the first time. And verily I saw this. On a black steed rode a human figure, but his head was the head of a bear. I was startled with a time of most horrible fright, and I feared I should die from fear alone, for never had I witnessed such a nightmare vision. Yet at the same moment, the hand axe of Ecgtheow was buried deep into the back of the rider, who toppled and fell, and the bear's head rolled from his body, and I saw that he had beneath the head of a man. Quick as a lightning bolt, Ecgtheow leapt upon the fallen creature, stabbed deep into the chest, turned the corpse, and withdrew his hand axe from the back, and ran to join the battle. I also joined the battle, for I was knocked spinning from my feet by the blow of a lance. I came to my feet just as one of the mist monsters bore down upon me with charging steed. Verily I did this. I stood firm my ground and held my lance upward, and the impact I thought would rend me. Yet the lance passed through the body of the rider, and he screamed most horribly, but he did not fall from his mount, and rode on. I fell gasping with pain in my stomach, but I was not truly injured, save for the moment. During the time of this battle, Hergr and Skeld loosed their many arrows, and the air was filled with their whistles, and they reached many marks. Now I also saw this. A rider swept into the compound, bent low on his galloping horse, and he caught up the body of the monster Ecgtheow had slain, swung it over his horse's neck, and rode off. For as I have said, these mist monsters leave no dead to be found in the morning light. The battle raged on a goodly period of time by the light of the blazing fire through the mist. I saw Hergr in mortal combat with one of the demons. Taking up a fresh lance, I drove it deep into the creature's back. Hergr, dripping blood, raised an arm in thanks, and plunged back into the combat. Here I felt great pride. Now I withdrew my lance, and whilst doing so, was knocked aside by some passing horseman, and from that time, in truth, I remember little. Upon the dawn I roused, and now I saw that I lay in the ditch, where the water was red as blood itself. I arose and walked through the smoking compound past all manner of death and destruction. I saw the earth was soaked in blood, as from a rain, with many puddles. I saw the bodies of slain nobles, and dead women and children likewise. No cries or mourning came from the kingdom of Hrothgar, for the North people do not lament any death, but on the contrary, there was unusual stillness in the air. I heard the crowing of a cock and the bark of a dog, but no human voices in the daylight. Then I entered the great hall of Heorot, and here found two bodies laid upon the rushes with their helmets upon their chests. There was Skeld, an earl of Bullywiff. There was Healfdene, earlier injured and now cold and pale. Both were dead. Also there was Rethel, youngest of the warriors, who sat upright in a corner and was attended by slave women. Rethel had been wounded previously, but he had a fresh injury in his stomach, and there was much blood. Surely it pained him greatly, and yet he showed only cheer, and he smiled and teased the slave women as they attempted to bind his wounds. If a warrior is wounded in the abdomen, they feed him a soup of onions and herbs. Then the women smell about his wounds, and if they smell onions, they say, "He has the soup illness," and they know he shall die. I saw with my own eyes the women prepare a soup of onion for Rethel, who drank a quantity of this, and the slave women smelled at his wound, and they smelled the odor of onion. At this, Rethel laughed and made some manner of hearty joke, and called for mead, which was brought to him, and he showed no trace of any care. Now Bulawith, the leader, and all his warriors conferred in another place in the great hall. I joined their company, but was accorded no greeting. I had learned some of the Norse speech, but not sufficient to follow their low and quickly spoken words. And so I walked to another place, and drank some mead, and felt the aches of my body. Then a slave woman came to bathe my wounds. These were a cut in the calf and another on my chest. Now Hergr came to me, for the conference of the warriors was at an end. The slave woman attending me had made my wounds burn most distractingly, yet I was determined to maintain a Northman show of great cheer. I said to Hergr, "What trifling matter shall we undertake next?" Hergr looked to my wounds and said to me, "You can ride well enough." I inquired where I would be riding, and in truth at once lost all my good cheer, for I had great weariness and no strength for aught but resting. Hergr said, "Tonight the glowworm dragon will attack again, but we are now too weak and our numbers too few. Our defenses are burned and destroyed. The glowworm dragon will kill us all." These words he spoke calmly. I saw this, and said to Hergr, "Where then do we ride?" I had in mind that by reason of their heavy losses, Bulawith and his company might be abandoning the kingdom of Hrothgar. In this I was not opposed. Hergr said to me, "A wolf that lies in its lair never gets meat, or a sleeping man victory." This is a Northman proverb, and from it I took a different plan, that we were going to attack on horseback the mist monsters where they lay, in the mountains or the hills. With no great heart I inquired of Hergr when this should be, and Hergr told me, "In the middle part of the day." Now I saw also that a child entered the hall, and carried in his hands some object of stone. This was examined by Hergr, and it was another of the headless stone carvings of a pregnant woman, bloated and ugly. Hergr shouted an oath, and dropped the stone from his trembling hands. He called upon the slave woman, who took the stone and placed it in the fire, where the heat of the flames caused it to crack and splinter into fragments. These fragments were then thrown into the sea, or so I was informed by Hergr. I inquired what was the meaning of the carved stone, and he said to me, "That is the image of the mother of the eaters of the dead. She who presides over them and directs them in their eating." Now I saw that Bulawith, who stood in the center of the great hall, was looking up at the arm of one of the fiends, which still hung from the rafters. Then he looked down at the two bodies of his slain companions, and at the waning Hrethel, and his shoulders fell, and his chin sank to his chest. And then he walked past them and out of the door, and I saw him put on his armor and take up his sword and prepare for battle anew. Bulawith called for 7 sturdy horses, and in the early part of the day we rode from the great hall of Hrothgar out into the flat plain, and thence toward the hills beyond. With us also were 4 hounds of pure white color, great animals which I should count nearer to wolves than dogs, so fierce was their demeanor. This made the totality of our attacking forces, and I believed it a weak gesture against so formidable an opponent. Yet the Northmen placed great faith upon surprise and a sly attack. Also, by their own reckoning, they are each man the equal of 3 or 4 of any other. Our direction of travel was determined by the trail of blood the retreating horsemen had left from the night. The hounds led, racing along their red, dripping trail. At length we rode into the hills, without hesitation or ceremony. Each of the warriors of Bulawith held the marks of fear upon their faces, and yet no man paused or faltered, but pressed onward. Now it was cold in the hills, in the forests of dark green trees, and a chill wind blew at our clothing, and we saw the hissing breath of the steeds. After some travel, we arrived at a new landscape. Here was a brackish tarn, no moor or heath, a desolate land, most resembling a desert, yet not sandy and dry, but damp and soggy. And over this land lay the faintest wisps of mist. The Northmen called this place the Desert of Dread. Now I saw with my own eyes that this mist lay upon the land in small pockets, or clustering like tiny clouds. I found this sight remarkable, but the Northmen took it to be nothing special. They said the land in this region has many brackish pools and bubbling hot springs which rise from the ground. The land is difficult for horses, and we made slower progress. We proceeded for a goodly distance. Now at a place the dogs halted. There was no difference in the terrain, or any mark or object upon the ground. Yet the dogs stopped as if they had arrived upon some fence or palpable obstruction. Bulliwif said,
"Here begins the land of the Wendal."
The Northmen say, "Fear has a white mouth," and now I saw that this is true, for they were all pale around the lips and mouth. No man spoke of his fear. Now we left the dogs behind, and rode onward into more snow, which was thin and crunching underfoot, and into thicker mists. Now we sighted another obstacle, grey and distant and large. Here was a giant rock, as high as a horse's saddle, and it was carved in the shape of a pregnant woman, with bulging belly and breasts, and no head or arms or legs. This rock was spattered with the blood of some sacrifices. Verily, it dripped with streaks of red, and was gruesome to look upon. The warriors drew out their swords and held them in readiness. We rode on apace. I smelled now the rotting carcass odor that I had smelled before in the great hall of Hrothgar, and as it reached my nostrils anew, I was faint of heart. Hergar rode alongside me and said in a soft voice, "How do you fare?" Not being capable of concealing my emotions, I said to him, "I am afraid."
"That is because you think upon what is to come and imagine fearsome things that could stop the blood of any man. Do not think ahead, and be cheerful by knowing that no man lives forever."
I saw the truth of his words. "In my society," I said, "we have a saying which is, thank Allah, for in his wisdom he put death at the end of life, and not at the beginning." Hergar smiled at this, and laughed briefly.
"In fear, even Arabs speak the truth," he said,
and then rode forward to tell my words to Bulliwif, who also laughed. The warriors of Bulliwif were glad for a joke at that time. Now we came to a hill, and reaching the crest, paused and looked down upon the encampment of the Wendal. Here is how it lay before us, as I saw with my own eyes. There was a valley, and in the valley a circle of rude huts of mud and straw, of poor construction, as a child might erect, and in the center of the circle a large fire now smoldering. Yet there were no horses, no animals, no movement, no sign of life of any kind, and this we saw through the shifting gauze of the mist.
"The Wendal are creatures of the night, even as owls or bats," Hergar said, "and they sleep during the hours of the day, so they are sleeping now, and we shall descend into their company, and fall upon them, and slay them in their dreams."
"We are so few," I said, for there were many thus below, which I perceived.
"We are enough," Hergar said,
and then he gave me a draught of mead, which I drank gratefully, with praise to Allah that it is not forbidden, or even disapproved of. In truth, I was finding my tongue hospitable to the very substance I once thought vile. Thus do strange things cease to be strange upon repetition.
The Islamic injunction against alcohol is literally an injunction against the fermented fruit of the grape, that is, wine. Fermented drinks of honey are specifically permitted to Muslims.
Fortified, The warriors of Bulliwif, and I among them, left our steeds upon the hill, and warily descended. We moved in stealth, and soon we were in the very heart of the village of the demons. And then, with a howl, Bulliwif raised his great sword Runding, and led the attack. I dashed with Hergar into one of the huts, blood pounding in my head, my sword light as a feather in my hands. Verily, I was ready for the mightiest battle of my life. I saw nothing inside. The hut was deserted, and barren as well, save for rude beds of straw, so clumsy in their appearance, they seemed more to resemble nests of some animal. We dashed outside and attacked the next of these mud huts. Again we found it empty. Verily, all the huts were empty, and the warriors of Bulliwif took glowing embers from the fire and set the huts aflame. They burned slowly, for they were damp. And thus we climbed up the hill, mounted our horses, and left the region of the Wendel, and departed the desert of dread. And all the warriors of Bulliwif were now sad of aspect, for the Wendel had surpassed them in cunning and cleverness, abandoning their lair in anticipation of the attack, and they would count the burning of their dwellings no great loss.